Good to be here with everybody for sure. It's really awesome to connect with this community. It's great to hear about all the cool things people are up to and doing. And as Bonnie mentioned, this isn't really necessarily, I'm not going to dive deep into my whole story of Beyond the Bear. I'll touch on it a little bit. But I was asked specifically to kind of talk about, you know, my role at Denali Family Services, where I work currently as the CEO of the organization, and sort of how I deal with some of the challenges that I encounter, how I handle issues of accessibility in the role, what kinds of things I do, and how I kind of navigate some of that. But Bonnie, I hate to disappoint you, but I'm going to take a different direction. Because as I thought about, you know, what I was going to say and what I had to offer, you know, I was thinking to myself, I'm actually a pretty terrible blind person. and really, many of you in the room, I guarantee, are much more skilled than myself when it comes to the skills of navigating our world with a visual impairment. I'm not one of those guys that travels the world with my cane independently very, very frequently. I mean, not one of those people that knows everything there is to know about the screen reading software that I use and all those things. I've always kind of taken the approach with all things in my life are, you know, what are the things I need to know to do the things that I need to do to get to where I want to go. And that's really how I've navigated it. So in many ways, actually, I think the message that I want to share more than anything is kind of exactly what, is it Tom that was just speaking? Is that his name? Yeah, Tom. It's very much like what Tom was honing in terms of finding your passion and zeroing in on that. Because my experience of blindness and navigating the world, you know, as a blind person hasn't been so much about the technical skills as much as it has been about the will and the determination. And so as I thought about, you know, how is it that I do what I do? What do I have to offer? It really comes down to asking yourself some of those questions about, you know, what is it that makes a life worth living for you? What are the things that you want to do? What are the things that scare you that you don't want to be true about you? And using all of that to harness a motivation, a fire, an inspiration. And so for me, for example, like for those of you that don't know my story, I think most of you probably know my story, but basically I was mauled by a brown bear down on the Kenai and Russian rivers. I'm very, very thankful to actually be alive. It's kind of a miracle that I am alive. And after the bear bit down across my face and then chewed on my face, there was about 2 hours before the EMTs would arrive, where I lay on the forest floor, essentially just bleeding out. And, you know, when I arrived at the ER room by helicopter, my condition was described in the emergency report, the emergency room report, as condition or patient arrived at the ER in a condition incompatible with life, eyes, nose, forehead anatomy unrecognizable. And as I laid there on the forest floor before help got to me, I had this sort of, you know, dissociative experience, which is very much like what you hear when people talk about, you know, death and dying type of experience, where there was I couldn't see anything, obviously, but there was no form or shape. I kind of like left my body because all the pain and the terror went away. And I was just there in this place where there was nothing but this bright blue light. And I realized that I was at this crossroads where I could let go of life and this nightmare would all be over. It was literally as easy as just making the decision to let go. And then I realized, on the other hand, that I could choose to fight to stay alive. And that I had no idea, I did not know I was blind, and I had no idea what kind of challenges would lie ahead. I had no idea if I would live or survive. And yet, you know, I won't get too into the details here for time's sake, but basically I had this image of my mom, and I got filled with this feeling of love, like the love between a parent and a child. And I decided in that moment that I was going to fight for life. And I realized that the worst possible thing that could happen from that moment that I made that decision to the end of my life, the worst thing would be to look back and question that decision to fight for life. And even worse than that would be to regret that decision. And so literally just from that moment there on the forest floor, it was just about one step forward at a time, never to look back, never to question that decision. And as I, you know, 12 days later, 13 days later, whatever, came out of a medically induced coma and started to deal with the realities that if I lived, I was going to be blind for the rest of my life and this kind of thing. You know, it was obviously super overwhelming. And I joke, you know, that I was the first blind person I ever met. But as a result, like, I had no idea what life could be like, obviously, for a blind person and that type of thing. And so I was filled with lots of fears, you know. And I in fact, when I do give my talks, one of the scenes that I always describe, because to me it's just such a powerful scene, is the first time that Amber, this girl that I'd been on, you know, one special date with, we'd been hanging out for maybe a month or so, just as, you know, seeing each other around town type of thing. And we spent one really special night together and kind of we were going to try this relationship thing. And the very next day I went out and got mauled by a bear, literally the next day. So, you know, this was all new. Anyway, she comes into the hospital room. And at the time, you know, I was off of the respirator, but I still had a tracheotomy. My mouth was wired shut. My head was all bandaged. I couldn't talk. I couldn't smell. Couldn't see. And when she came into the hospital room for the, you know, first time that we really spent together since I'd been out of a coma, I wrote things down on a whiteboard. That's how I was communicating with people at the time. And so I wrote down, I felt like I needed to get the elephant out of the room. So I just wrote down, I'm blind. She's like, yeah, I know. And I'm really sorry. And then I wrote down crazy. And she's like, yeah, this is really crazy. And then I wrote down really the only other thing that I had to say, which was I'm scared, you know, and I was so filled with fear because of, even if I did survive, even if I lived, like I was scared about what my life would be like as a blind person. And I really had to reflect then with that on, you know, what are the things that would make a life worth living? Like, what are those things? And I reflected on, like, literally then and there, like, I wasn't even out of the medical woods yet, so to speak. And I was reflecting on the fact that I almost died without having kids and experiencing the joys of being a parent. I almost died without experiencing the type of love that comes with a marriage and a lifelong commitment. And that was really powerful to me. I thought about how hard it would be to find work that gave me a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning. And I thought I'd be like shuffled into doing medial work that wasn't very fulfilling. And these were the types of things that I was so scared about. It was about how I would live the rest of my life potentially. And so that was a powerful motivating piece. And I didn't expect Amber to stay with me. You know, I thought that was ridiculous. Like, nobody would ask, would stay with somebody in my condition. So we kind of split ways, went our separate directions. And, you know, several months later, we kept in touch as friends over the phone and stuff as I went through more surgeries and rehab and all that stuff. But she said something to me several months later, you know, well, to be honest, I'd heard she was dating somebody. So I called and I said, hey, I heard you might be seeing somebody and I just want you to know that's totally cool. And she said, yeah, I am. And he's already getting really sick of how much I talk about you. And so for me, that was like the first moment where I felt like there was a sense of hope, you know, hope that maybe I could be somebody who could be loved, who could find love in marriage. And that lit a fire. I thought, who can I be that would make me worthy of somebody's love? What kinds of value and contributions can I make in a relationship? Can I make as a husband or as a father? And what does that need to look like for me? And so the goal, like the fire, the inspiration for me was, how do I find love in my life, right? And then I started to think of like, well, who would I want to be in this relationship? What things of value do I have to offer and to add? And that became my fire. And so call me Western and you know, whatever. But my thought was like, I need to be able to provide for a family, you know, like I need to be able to have a job. I don't want to be somebody that could be taken care of. So I started to really think about that. And like all of us, you know, with blindness as a disability, the way I thought about it, as many of us in this room do, is it's not so much the disability, but what are the various abilities, right? And so prior to this, I've been working with kids with mental health issues. I was an activity therapist doing a lot of outdoor rec type stuff, and couldn't really keep doing the type of work that I had been doing necessarily. But I thought, you know, I really could be a clinical therapist, and I have the skill set. I'm good with people. I'm quick on my toes. I can be present with people who are going through challenges. And so I thought, you know, that's something I could really see myself doing well at. And so needless to say, it would require a master's degree and all of those kinds of things. And so kudos. I know we have one person in here that works for DSS at UAA. Thank you. Thank you. Very awesome. That was a huge support to me getting through my master's program at UAA. It was tremendous. And I had some of the same experiences, like we heard from the pharmacist earlier, of some of her challenges. You know, when I was in my statistics class, which was one of the prerequisites, the teacher just stood in front of the class teaching on an overhead projector. And I've never been a blind student before. I don't know if I can be successful as a blind student, but it took me all about two classes to realize I was not going to learn statistics this way. And so I literally was having like massive panic attacks. The types of panic attacks where it's like you can feel your shirt moving because your heart's beating so loud, your stomach is in knots and you feel nauseous. Your arms and legs are kind of getting numb. You feel completely woozy. Everything sounds far away, like it's coming through a 20-foot long pipe or something. And I felt like I was going to pass out in statistics class. And literally the voice in my head, like the conversation with myself was like, oh my God, I'm going to pass out. I think I should get up and go to the bathroom because I can pass out there. But if I pass out in the bathroom, I might hit my head and it might be a while before somebody finds me. So maybe I should pass out here in statistics because that would be much better. And it was moments like that that I just wanted to get up and walk out of class, go get on the bus, go home, crawl into bed and say, enough. Nobody will blame me. I'm blind. They'll all give me the pass. But I couldn't do that, right? Because I had a dream. I had this, I wanted to be somebody who could add value. I wanted to be somebody who earned a place in a relationship, who could had something to offer as a father, who made it to the place of having meaningful work in my life. Those were the things to me that I had defined as the things that make a life worth living, the things that make life a good thing for me, like a happy place. And so to give up on that, like, what does that mean about me as a person type of a thing, right? And so I ended up getting like three different tutors and learning statistics outside of class. And that's kind of what I mean. Like, I didn't necessarily have all the greatest computer skills. I didn't necessarily, you know, have the best cane skills or anything else. It was just that pure determination, the pure willingness to experience extremely uncomfortable situations, panic attacks, you know, all of us, I'm sure, hitting our heads on things and you know, dealing with the social awkwardness of like, you know, oh, are you looking for something? Well, yeah, I'm looking for the door, but I need to find the wall in order to find the door, you know, like leave me alone type of moments. Like, yeah, yeah. Or like, oh, can I help you find something? No, I'm just finding it with my hands, you know. You know, so, but anyway, all those types of things. So just the willingness to endure, all of that, I think is really the biggest thing for me. And then when I finally did graduate and I got on as a therapist with Denali Family Services, it was really valuable, I think, for me to stick with that, to stick with the tribe, because very quickly people recognized that, oh, this guy's capable. You know, this guy, you know, because people, like, there'd be these difficult situations like, oh, this parent of this foster child is having her child do wall sits and stand in a corner and write 100 times, I will not hit my brother. And all the therapists were like, oh God, I don't want to have that conversation. I was like, I'll have that conversation. You know, this boy's mother just died of suicide. Nobody wants to talk to him. I'll talk to him. So I made myself a person of value by taking on many of the challenges in the workplace and identified myself as a leader in doing so. Those weren't comfortable conversations either, right? Extremely uncomfortable situations, but I had goals. You know, I had things that I needed to prove to myself more than anything, I think. And so very quickly, I worked my way up into a director of therapeutic foster care. From there, after 3 years, I became the clinical director, overseeing about 20 master's level therapists in 2 locations where we were providing care for about 200 kids and families at any given time. And just this past January, I took the position as CEO, where I'm now responsible for the organization with about 100 employees, about 70 contractors, and a $12 million budget each year. So it's a tremendous responsibility. It's a tremendous weight on my shoulders. But just like everything else that I've done up to this point, I did it in good faith, knowing that I'll figure it out. It's not going to be comfortable getting there. I'm not entering this job knowing how to do everything, but I'll figure it out. I'll get there and I won't give up, right? Like, that's the thing with blindness or with anything in life. I think there's some cliche. I don't remember it, so I apologize. I'm going to butcher a cliche. But it's basically like, successful people in life don't get there because they're successful. They get there because every time they get knocked down, they get back up and they keep trying. Like, and that's honestly like the only secret to my success, is that I have not accepted failure. You know, I fail plenty. I fail every day, it seems like, but I just keep getting back up. And the other thing I noticed is like, there's things that we do because, you know, we have these goals and dreams. And so, like, for me, for example, just another example, Amber, that girl, just so you know, she's my wife now. She's here in the room with us. Yeah. Thank you. And we do have a 13 and 15 year old kid at home who are lovely, lovely children. But, you know, she loves to travel. And so as somebody who wants to accommodate that, I want my wife to be happy. I don't want to make her stay in Alaska all winter long. So, okay, we'll travel. Well, I love the idea of traveling. The idea of traveling is awesome, right? But I'll tell you what, when I'm sitting there in the airport getting panic attacks, it's not very much fun. You know what I mean? When I'm, you know, in these exotic locations or whatever, and yeah, just not really enjoying myself because of X, Y, or Z, usually it's that anxiety stuff that kicks in, but it's not that much fun. I always, you know, use the old Grateful Dead line that I'm having a hard time living the good life. But, you know, you do it enough and it gets less scary. It gets less overwhelming, just like everything else. You know, I used to be terrified to stand in front of groups like this and share story. But, you know, you do something enough and it just gets easier and easier. And the same is true for any professional endeavor, any scholastic endeavor, is that you get used to it and you figure it out. So I love the things that I've heard here today about blindness not being a tragedy. It's a nuisance. Well, it's a nuisance for sure. And sometimes it's a real pain in the ass, you know? Yeah. Or, that's right. Or the head, the shins for sure. Yeah. But the point is that we can persevere. That's kind of my point. You know what I mean? We get back up. We keep going. We don't accept that as the end of the story. And through this process, you know, I've learned that there's this challenge, the challenges, the pain in the butts that it is, the nuisance that it is, can keep people, myself included, from engaging in life fully. You know what I mean? It can keep us from pursuing those dreams and those goals, or from even identifying those dreams and goals. And to me, that almost is the definition of disability. When you allow something to prevent you from engaging in life, it's not the disability itself. The more I've engaged in life, the bigger my life has become, and the bigger my life has become, the smaller my disability gets. That's my line, and I'm sticking to it. So some really exciting things. As Bonnie mentioned, you know, I've written a book, or co-authored a book called Beyond the Bear, How I Learned to Live and Love Again After Being Blinded by a Bear. I speak nationally now on my story and the story of Beyond the Bear. And we just finished a movie script recently. So we're working on that project now. We had a brush with something amazing this past week. Actually, Steven Spielberg's team was really excited about it. And so Steven actually read the script last week. Sadly, he did not choose it. He did not select it. So it was really exciting. I know, it was really amazing. So close. But once again, is that the end of the story? Not for me. Thank you very much, guys. So I don't know, Bonnie, if we have time for questions or...
Question number two is, give us the last two.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We're going to take a quick break. They have lemonade and popcorn out there. Do you have time for us to get that?
Well, we actually have to go pick up our daughter from soccer.
Oh, I know.
And get her to a friend's house, and then, you know, all the things. Yep.
Dad's got duties.
Yep, exactly.
So let's take two questions, and quietly,
This is Kelsey. Dan, who would you like to play you in a movie?
That's a great question, but I'm terrible at that game because I don't know any 25-year-old actors. Yeah. I'm terrible at that game. The youngest actor I could tell you is probably 50 years old, and that won't work. There you go. I like it. Yeah. I asked my children that question. They have better answers than I.
Do you still like the fish?
Do I still love the fish? Yes, 100%. Yeah, I'm out there every year, sharing those experiences with my kids, and yeah, it's really, really awesome. That's correct. Yes. Yeah. Well, you probably catch the big one then. So there you go.
Yeah, this is Tom.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Hold on.
This is Katie, and I was just wondering if you had any tips or suggestions when working in your own field or someone else's, how to navigate in your own style as a visually impaired.
In the workplace, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the biggest thing was putting myself out there early, taking on as many challenges as I could. I kind of had to prove, I was proving it to myself, but really proving it to everybody else. And then really quickly, like within my first year, I became a leader, and people respected that. And I've been in the same organization now for 13 years. And so it's been just a non-issue for me in my workplace for many, many years because everybody knows me and I'm well regarded. In fact, you know, when the CEO position became available, like I was encouraged by many in the organization to go for it. And the only person who was supportive but wasn't was the person who knew that she was probably going to need to take my job. So she was a little bit like, dang it, Dan, now I'm going to have to apply for this job. And, you know, yeah, been such a pleasure kind of working together in our previous roles. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, that's just it, just establishing yourself as competent and courageous in your workplace. I I totally do agree with the comments, I think, by Tom about the first 5 minutes of an interview. I always go in and put my disability on the table for discussion because I know that they're going to have questions about it. And so I'm the first to just say, hey, like, let's just address this because I know this is a thing. And usually that's a way that we can exude a lot of confidence. It's like, hey, I bring my own support. I bring my own tech people. If there's things that come up, I work with the Alaska Center. I work with DBR. You're not going to have to worry about it. Thank you very much. Yeah. And I will say, though, real quickly, that I do continue to learn the skills of blindness. Like, it's funny. Like, I don't read Braille. I took classes for some months, which I know is crazy, but I'm probably one of the only illiterate authors in the world. As a result, so that's kind of interesting.
Do I remember right that you won a national scholarship at some point from the National Federation of Blind?
It was a grant, but yes, grant. I did receive a grant.
And what's your connection been with NFB since? Are you still involved? Do you want to be involved? Because we got lots of work here.
Yep, I have been involved. I actually served as the president for some years. Yep.
Okay.
And continue to stay. I consider myself a friend of the center and a friend of NFB very much. I'm a member, a paid member every year, but my life is super duper busy at this point, so I have to make a lot of choices. Yeah.
Well, we're going to keep asking.
All right, good. All right, cool. Well, thanks a lot, everybody. Good to be here.
Thank you again for coming, Dan.